you know, you have just met or you've just barely met, and you're able to have these hour-long conversations about like the most interesting or the most personal matters. I think that to me is incredible. And I think that is a sort of something that is often underlooked when people talk about like the benefits of podcasting. You know, people will share about like, oh, you might be able to get sponsorship or brand awareness, or this might be a funnel for some product that you're selling. But one thing that has always been a super selling point for me has been the connections that I'm able to have, or that I'm able to make while doing podcasting.
Covering the Asian podcasting scene.
Greetings from my underground bunker. This is Norm, and welcome to Pod Lovers Asia, the show where we cover everything and anything related to the Asian podcasting scene, interviewing hosts, producers, and those who have taken a leap of faith into full-time podcast production, like my guest for this episode, Danny Cordy. Danny is a full-time podcast producer and founder of Fable Productions, his venture into creating amazing narrative shows for clients and companies who want to convey a message in the most powerful format, and that is podcast. Obviously, I agree. I've known Danny for a while. We chatted since the time that we met in the Asia Podcast Summit last year, and this was a good time to get an update and check up on things and how he's doing building up Fable Productions and diving more into his story, his origin story. In this episode, we talk about how he took a leap of faith from his safe job doing auditing at KPMG to diving into full-time podcasting, the mindset behind that decision, and what excites him the most about podcasting in general. And he also shares his insights on how clients in Asia think about podcasting from a producer's perspective. So it's nice to hear how he's been doing, building up Fable Production, sorry. I am excited for this. I hope you are too, my friend. So let's dive into my chat with Danny Cordy of Fable Productions.
Okay.
For the time being, that's why I want to hear more about the fact that you do screwed up moments.
Yeah.
And you're working on this full time, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Through Fable Productions, your company.
Mm-hmm.
And you are chugging along doing all of this despite the coronavirus outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know we did talk about this just earlier before we started recording, which yeah. I think I'm pretty sure you clicked the record button already. But let's go about this a different angle. How did you meet up with your first client, the one who is hosting Screwed Up Moments?
In order to tell this story, I have to go a little bit further back. So,
sure, please.
Before I was doing Fable Productions and before I was doing Screwed Up Moments, I was doing this show called The Economical Rice Podcast. And that was the first podcast I ever started. And basically what that show is it was just my passion project to talk about economics, right?
Yeah.
There was an event that I went to with my wife, and it was called the Happiness Film Festival. And it was organized by this organization called Happiness Initiative. And we watched this Japanese film, and then these two, the co-founders of Happiness Initiative, came on, and then they told us their story about how, you know, they were just two people, but they wanted to let us know that it was, you know, incredible work that they put in to organize this entire event. And it was a pretty successful event. It was like, you know, the entire film festival, it was 8 festivals, like 1,500 people showed up. And then as I was going home from that film festival, all I could think about was, holy shit, you know, it's just two people, yet they managed to organize this whole thing, right? This massive, at least to me, from that just two-person perspective, massive film festival. They managed to pull in like, I don't know, 30 organizational partners or something like that. And then in my head, I was just like, I gotta talk to these guys. I want to know how to do it. I want to set up an interview. So I just cold emailed them, right? And then they replied a week later, and then they said that, hey, Danny, sure thing. But the thing is, we are going overseas soon for work. Could you do it on this, I think it was like a Thursday morning or like a Friday morning? And at that time, I was still at my job. I was working as an auditor with KPMG at the time. So of course, you know, in the morning, you have to be at work. But because I really wanted to talk to these guys, I think I told my senior on that week, at the night before, that, hey, I'm going to be coming into work a little bit late tomorrow. I'll get the work that I need to do done tonight. I'll overtime tonight. And then tomorrow I'll come in a little bit late. Is that fine? And then it's my senior's like, okay. And then the next morning, you know, I dressed up in my work attire. And then I went down to the offices of Happiness Initiative, did the interview with them. And then I got back to my office at around like 11 a.m. Pretty crazy, crazy shit. Yeah, but that was how I first met them. And then, so that episode turned out pretty well. It was basically talking about how they sort of pursued this idea of like wanting to improve the well-being and happiness of Singapore, turn it into like an organization, and how they left their full-time jobs to pursue this full-time. And I was like pretty freaking inspired by it, because like, you know, you talk about like podcasting being a passion project or anything being a passion project, right? This was like the quintessential passion project story of like hustling and grinding and like making that dream a reality. Because on its face, it's like, it seems so idealistic and almost naive. But then the kind of things they were doing was pretty insane. Like they told me, I was asking about their marketing strategy, right? How they promoted the event. And then Simon, one of them says that, oh, how we promoted it was that I sent like, I think 1,000 Facebook messages. Like no kidding.
Oh,
he was spamming Facebook Messenger to around 1,000 people. He literally got blocked because Facebook thought he was spamming. But once his account got unbanned, then he would start to, you know, send messages again and again and again and again. Yeah, it was really crazy. Yeah. So then how Screwed Up Moments came about was that Screwed Up Moments was actually a live event that they were doing. So the idea was that for each event, they would have three speakers come up on stage and then share their story. They would have like a 20-minute presentation just to share their story of like the worst time in their life, and then, you know, how they came back from it, and after the audience can ask them questions, right? And then I attended a couple of events, and I was always so, you know, mind blown by some of the stories that these people are sharing. And at the same time, how the audience was so engrossed and so engaged with them. I had never been in such a space before where someone was allowed to be so vulnerable in terms of like the kind of things they were sharing. Like people were talking about, for instance, there was this one person who survived cancer and then his mother had dementia. And then there was another person who, you know, went through a car accident. There was another person who shared that, you know, they were emotionally abused and scarred by their mom, who was a narcissist. So it was really raw, vulnerable stuff that you normally wouldn't hear. And people were just, the live audience at the time were just soaking it up. And so from that experience, when I go home from that experience, you know, number one, the sort of impact to me was that I always felt like it was a punch to the gut, because those stories were at times dead heavy. But secondly, in my head, I was like, why isn't this on a podcast? Because you would think that podcasts were sort of tailor-made for sharing these kinds of stories, right? And so off I went, you know, next day at work, I started working on this pitch. I started to do up like a presentation, talk about like the benefits of podcasting, you know, how this is going to be a little bit different from what they do as a live show, and how, you know, with podcasts, now it can be permanently up on the internet where people can have better access to it, rather than what they were previously doing, where they weren't documenting, they weren't recording the stories at all. What they told about the stories was just a short little paragraph on their website. So now with this project, I aim to sort of more fully flesh their stories out and have a sort of permanent place where more people can access them instead of just that live audience on that night. And so thankfully, they were really supportive, because, you know, after the episode that I did with them for Economical Rice Podcast, they were pretty happy and they were quite excited about, you know, this whole thing about podcasting. And then, so I pitched to them the idea of Screwed Up Moments. They said yes. And then we went to plan out the production. So I took like my entire 3-week annual leave to plan out the entire production schedule, which means recording everything. And so we got all the recording done. And then by September, I already had a sort of plan in mind that I was going to leave my job and then this is something that I could pursue. And so on September, I think it was like maybe the first or the second, I tendered my resignation. On October the 2nd, I officially left KPMG. And then October the 3rd, we launched Screwed Up Moments with a live event and then the first episode the next day. So yeah, pretty crazy, pretty crazy story.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's how Screwed Up Moments came to be. And now we have finished our first season. It was 10 episodes, 9 guests, and then 1 guest had like a 2-part episode. And then we did like, I think, a bunch of like behind the scenes short episodes to tie it in like in between the seasons. And now we're recording for the second season, which I think will be due. I think we'll start releasing them around early May-ish. Yeah.
Nice. Congrats on finishing up season one.
Yeah,
wow,
thank you.
That's pretty awesome. I want to ask that transition between handing in the resignation from the beginning of September all the way until October. What was going through your head when you are about to resign from your usual 9-to-5 at KPMG, which is, you know, a pretty good safety net, to this really, shall we say, risky venture, diving into something...
The Wild West.
Yeah, the Wild West, especially in Asia. Well, more like the Wild East. But what was going through your head? Was there a lot of uncertainty? Was there a lot of fear in the worst happening or anything like that?
Yeah, so tendering my resignation was honestly like the weirdest feeling that I've ever had, because I had been at this job for like 2 years, and then so my day-to-day schedule, my day-to-day routines was pretty much revolved around this job, right? And then even sometimes during the weekends, I have worries about like the work I need to do or what needs to be done or like the clients I need to meet. So tendering my resignation and that final month, and especially that final day, was just so weird and so surreal. Even just pressing the send button on the email where I send my resignation letter to my managers, that felt so surreal as well. I couldn't do it. I had to ask my senior to help me press the button.
Oh my goodness.
The email. Yeah, but and the final day as well is just like when I returned like my laptop and my staff pass and everything, and I was going home, it was like 4 p.m. in the middle of the afternoon, and my bag just felt so light, but at the same time I just felt so weird. It's a really, really, really weird feeling. But at the same time, my transition, I would say it was not as rough as I think maybe some of the people have it if they take like a direct leap of faith with no clear plan out from the beginning. Because this was already something that I had planned for a pretty long while. And the reason why I say this is because I think in around April, my wife, she told me that she had gotten a job offer. She was doing a PhD in nursing at the time, and then she was due to finish at around August, right? So at the time, she was looking for like job opportunities. And so April, she told me that she had got a job offer at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, right? Which is in the United States. So, and then after that call, she asked me, you know, hey, so what are you going to do? Are you going to leave your job and come over here? And then I just sat on that for like a couple of weeks, because I really honestly didn't know what to do. And at that time, the thought of like doing anything related to podcasting full time hadn't even crossed my mind at all, right? But I slowly tried to approach this idea, and then, you know, the whole interaction with Screwed Up Moments and you know, the interactions with Happiness Initiative and how good the meetings went, that sort of gave me I think more confidence into thinking that actually this could be a sort of opportunity in a sense, right? Because I didn't like doing my auditing stuff at all. I was pretty decent at it. I was actually doing well in my job, getting promoted and stuff, but I really didn't care for it at all. And then just the thought of like spending the next 30 to 40 years of my life doing that same thing over and over again just killed me. So that was why I was, you know, spending my mornings going out recording interviews, and then spending time out of my workday to work pitches to do up the presentations for Screwed Up Moments, right? And yeah, so by the time I had already left KPMG, I had this sort of at least a short runway that I had built, right? In terms of like when I leave my job, at least I have something to do. Right. I was working on the editing and then the publishing, and this was keeping me pretty involved for like the next few months. And at the same time, I was already starting to talk to and meet with other potential clients and then getting their shows up and running and so on. So the transition, it was pretty okay. I have to say, even though it was pretty weird, I didn't really have that much time to process how weird it was and how and how crazy this whole Wild East podcasting thing was. It wasn't only until I finished production for Screw Up Moment season one, where I had like a week or two to just off break to just soak in everything, that I was like, oh shit, what do I do next? Yeah, so then that's where the sort of like, oh, how can I, you know, increase my branding? What else can I do? How can I reach out? That's sort of where that next step kicks in. Yeah.
Are you currently at that next step right now? Like looking for more people to collaborate with, or to pitch more shows or produce more shows with people? Or are you in a situation where their workload is just good? And yeah, tell me about that.
Yeah, so now it's still definitely in the stage of sort of building up and making the business more sustainable, because I have like less than a handful of clients right now, but I'm slowly and slowly working on more and more projects, continually meeting more people. Thankfully, you know, we have things like LinkedIn, and then word of mouth spreads around. So, you know, I have at least some work to tide me over for now, but hopefully in the future we can build it to more of a more sustainable thing. Because right now my situation is just I'm in a bit of a weird spot, right? Because I didn't come from like a sound engineering background or like a music producer background, and I don't have like my own studio or something, right? Everything I did was like, I pretty much learned from experience, did from scratch, and then now I'm just trying to impart this knowledge and help people get over that initial hurdle that everyone faces when they're trying to start up their podcast. So I have a little bit of flexibility in terms of that, but maybe in the future, if I get enough volume in terms of clients, then I can think about like studio, you know, employees and something like that. But yeah, we're not at that stage yet, no.
Like a Fable Studios or a Fable office
in
Singapore or something? Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, I want to touch on that leap of faith moment. I know you told me about the thoughts that you've had.
Sure.
How there is a weird transition to go from 9 to 5 full time in a boring place. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to call out the company for being boring, but like from your job at the time all the way until this interesting industry where, you know, things can go wrong.
Yeah.
But the clients that you meet with are super interesting. The shows that you work on may vary completely, and I want to impart some sort of wisdom from how you've been going through this journey up until now to someone who may want to take that same leap of faith into podcasting. Maybe not to the extent of which you are right now, but maybe just as a freelance producer or as someone who wants to help with other podcasts in some way.
Yeah.
Do you happen to have any tips or tricks on how to take that leap of faith into something as interesting as podcasting?
Yeah. I would definitely say, if you want to do this full time, definitely, at least if you're coming from Southeast Asia, don't think about the advertising game for now, because the current climate in Singapore or in Malaysia or in Indonesia, at least to me, I don't think they're advertiser ready yet. So, you know, the typical way that podcasts get monetized is that, you know, they build a show, you know, once the show gets large enough, then they get advertisers and sponsors. That's how they get paid and stuff. I don't think we're at that stage yet, which is why I ventured on this path of the production side instead. But at the same time, be willing to learn. You will encounter a lot of different things and a lot of different people and a lot of different obstacles. Every client has their own pain points and their own starting points. Certainly clients from the US, they have a different understanding of what podcasts are compared to clients from Singapore or from Malaysia, right? So you have to sort of adjust your approach to them and what your value proposition is to them. And I would say even me, myself now, I am still in the learning process. You know, from time to time, I will meet up with random people who are doing podcasting in and around Singapore just to ask them about what got them into podcasting in the first place, and then what they struggle with, what are their pain points. And then from there, I figure out like, oh, this is how I can help them and how I may provide support and so on. For Singapore, right, a lot of the questions I hear about is, it would sound like even the most basic questions. It's like, how do I even get my podcast online, right?
Yeah.
even these days when you have things like Anchor, which is like one of the most user-friendly, I would say, hosting solutions, right? People can still wonder, people can still ask like, oh, how do I get a podcast online? Which I think it was like, you know, just with 10 minutes of Googling and you'll be able to figure it out. But at the same time, there's a lot of information out there which muddies things up, which and that's sort of, I think, why people have all these sorts of questions, because they're looking for like best approach, right? They're not looking just for one way. They're looking for like, what's the best way or what would you recommend? And then if you're talking about an American client, then they will be talking something a little bit different. They're talking about maybe strategy or maybe, you know, how can we monetize shows and stuff like that. So yeah, it's a learning process. Be open to sort of face obstacles and be open to adapt and change. But at the same time, enjoy the process. I mean, if you didn't like podcasting, I don't know why you would be jumping into it full steam. Yeah, the funny thing that I always hear from some people in Singapore, you know, in Singapore, we have a lot of these like workshops, right? Like introduction to podcasting workshops. One common question that we always hear from some random audience member is that, oh, how can we monetize this?
Yeah.
And then in my head, I'm thinking is that if your first priority in starting a podcast is to make money, you'd be better off just working at McDonald's or doing Grab or doing delivery. Because I think at the outset, at least in the short term, that will get you more money than podcasting for sure. Podcasting is a long-term gain. But at the same time, podcasting offers so many different things that you wouldn't get from a typical job. I think most jobs wouldn't offer you the same thing that podcasting does, in the sense that you're able to connect and talk to and share stories with people that, you know, you have just met or you've just barely met, and you're able to have these hour-long conversations about like the most interesting or the most personal matters. I think that to me, I think is incredible. And I think that is a sort of something that is often underlooked when people talk about like the benefits of podcasting. You know, people will share about like, oh, you might be able to get sponsorship or brand awareness, or this might be a funnel for some product that you're selling. But one thing that has always been a super selling point for me has been the connections that I'm able to have, or that I'm able to make while doing podcasting. Yeah.
Those unmentioned benefits.
The intangibles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, those are rarely ever talked about. And I think it seems like at first glance, it's not really relevant to say an introductory workshop to podcasting. And mainly because you have a filtered audience when you're there, right? They're there to create their own shows, or they're there to find a way to make good use of their time. And sometimes people define that by earning money. I guess that's why a lot of people have common questions like, how do we make money? There's a lot of that happening across Asia. And I have a strange theory about that. I think it's because we look at successful podcasters as examples of what we can gain if we were to take up podcasting. Just like how if you are a YouTuber or an aspiring YouTuber, you look up the most successful YouTubers in the world. They make millions of dollars per year. And then that creates this impression that, oh, if you yourself make a video, then you would also earn the same amount of money as them. So this like earning mindset when coming into this industry, which is essentially, it's not even an industry, it's a medium, right? It's just a way to articulate a message or convey a message. It's hard to make money off of that unless you're in for the long term. Like you have Joe Rogan, who would make like, I think, $1 million+ a year.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's 10 years of foundation right there.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if you've seen this. Maybe I should send you the link after. But have you seen Joe Rogan's episode 1?
No.
No.
I bet it's
really
horrible.
Funny. It's hilarious. You know what it is?
What?
It's actually like his tech messed up. Like he didn't know that it was live.
Oh, no.
And then
way.
Only in the last 3 minutes, he's like, oh shit, I'm live. Oh, hey guys, it's Joe. And then, and it's just 10 minutes on YouTube Live or something like that. I'm just trying to find a video somewhere. And it's hilarious. And he didn't go in with a plan to earn $1 million a year. He came in to, because he had already defined his voice as one worth listening to in the podcasting space. And then he has kept chugging along with that for the next few years. So I really do respect the fact that you really brought up the intangibles, because we honestly need to talk more about that when it comes to benefits to talking about podcasting in general to the public. And that's also another story when we have to try to raise awareness about this space.
Yeah. Can I just add one more point on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of intangibles, right? You can also talk about like the sort of unseen rewards about podcasting as well. And then I don't know if this is the case for you, right? But when I started podcasting, I certainly had that vision in mind of like, oh, I'm going to hit 1 million downloads like within 6 months. I'm going to have this incredible roller coaster ride, be famous and stuff like that, right? Of course, within like the first 3 weeks, you realize, oh shit, this is going to be a lot harder than expected, right? And then, but then the funny thing is that, you know, from time to time, occasionally you get these random emails or comments that just mention, oh, hey, I love this episode, or hey, your podcast is great, or hey, I love what you're doing. And it's so weird because like for people who are independents, right, and they don't have like a strong media or they weren't a well-known personality beforehand, this is such a foreign thing to sort of experience. And I never gotten these kind of messages before whereby people say they appreciate my work, you know, please keep this up and stuff like that. And then especially I think the first time I met you was at the podcasting summit, right, in Singapore last year. One of the people there actually came up to me and when we introduced, I told them that, oh, hey, I do this show called the Economical Rice Podcast. And then they were like, oh, my cousin listens to that. He told me about your show. It's a really good show. I was like, what? it feels really weird. But at the same time, it's like, you know, this is like, how to say, validation for your work. It's a really good feeling. And this is another sort of unseen reward as well, aside from like making connections and having deep conversations. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you've had those, Norman.
I've had a few, mainly, well, not in person. I haven't had someone come up to me and talk about my show, because I do multiple shows, so just Pod Lovers. Maybe like one or two people told me in person that they appreciated my shows, and it's more like Twitter is basically where all the podcasters live.
Yeah.
And they are pretty open about making comments about other people's shows, whether they respect them or like them or hate them.
Yeah.
And I've had quite a few on Pod Lovers, which is great. I really do appreciate, shout outs to the few people who actually do take the time to reply and tweet and talk about the show. So
yeah,
and thank you so much.
I love the show that you're doing, Pod Lovers Asia. It's certainly, I think the Asian podcasting scene definitely needs someone to sort of go in deeper and talk to who the players are. So yeah, kudos to what you're doing. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's also one of the intangible benefits. You have a show that once it has a certain amount of listeners, it attracts people towards the brand. And I think I'm starting to like understand firsthand what it means to have a brand, like not just my name, but rather this show. Like this show has this mission, and this mission is still active by the number of episodes. And people see this episode, this show, and they're like, oh, okay, someone is trying to bring, for example, the Asian podcasting scene together, which is fantastic because that means that there is this potential aggregate community thing that's happening. So hopefully I will help out with that over in due time.
Yeah. You have a responsibility now, Norman. I hope you live up to it.
Yeah. That's why that common question of how do you make money off of this thing, it's been plaguing my mind. And I'm not talking about the show specifically. I'm talking about like making money in general. Because I want to sustain my livelihood while I'm helping out with the community, which would be great because I mean, I still want to have food on the table, but I want to make sure that I'm still alive and breathing when I'm building this community across Asia. But we'll see about that.
Yeah.
Right. I got two questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
One is, if eyes are windows to the soul, then your podcast playlist is the windows to your thoughts. So, Danny, what is on your recent podcast listening playlist?
This one's a little bit funny.
Okay.
It's Ting Tun Pao Xian by Renegade Radio.
Oh, okay. Pillars of Youth. Yeah, Pillars of Youth.
Renegade exactly. Radio. Yeah. Yeah, so
nice.
So and the reason I got into it was because you know, during the podcasting summit, right? I was one of the judges, and this was one of the shows that I had to sort of judge. And I thought it was like super underrated. because in terms of like the show design and like the structure and like the sort of the way the host interacted and how they dealt with the topic, it was like top notch. It sounded like a really well done radio produced show. And then I go online and find out it's like, oh, it's this bunch of crazy idiots who started Renegade Radio. Yeah. Yeah. So I really love the show. Me and my wife, we normally listen to it on our drives. It's at the same time, there's another aspect to it as well. We tend to make fun of the show as well because sometimes they're a little bit outrageous with the things that they say. Sometimes they go on these long rants whereby it almost sounds as if they're reading just like Instagram quotes with like these inspirational messages. And me and my wife are just making fun of them. But it's a great show. I love that show. Yeah. And then, in terms of other than that, I have a few that I normally circulate. I've been getting into your show a bit more, Pot Lovers Asia. And I've been listening to a bunch of stuff from Singapore. You know, my friends, the Long Kang Kiris, they always put out great, hilarious episodes. And but in terms of more sort of the industry stable, I would say, there's this one show that I always love to recommend, and it's called Anthropocene Reviewed. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Anthropocene Reviewed. Okay. Yeah. You have to spell that for me. It's going to be
Anthropocene Reviewed. Anthropocene Reviewed. So it's by WNYC. And I think the show, what's so interesting about the show is that it is minimalist, but at the same time, it is so incredibly well done. So basically, they just have this guy called John Green. Do you know who John Green is? So John Green...
Sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. So John Green is this very pretty famous YA author, right? So he wrote, I think it was The Fault in Our Stars. And he's done like various other podcasts, and he has like a YouTube show and stuff. So he was, I think, brought on to do this show called Anthropocene Reviewed. And basically the premise of the show, right, is that he would write out a script and research just random topics about the human-centered age and then rate them on a 5-star scale. So...
Okay.
So the premise sounds really, really ridiculously simple. And the way to execute the production is just him narrating into a microphone. And back then, in the earlier seasons, right, they didn't have like any music at all. Later seasons, they would have like a little bit of a music bed and stuff. But it's basically just him all the while narrating his thoughts about a particular subject. So, you know, some subjects would be like maybe on the topic of whispering. Some subjects is like the weather, right? Just random ass subjects about anything under the sun, basically. But the way he writes and the way he sometimes injects his own personal narrative and you know he researches like all these historical events and stuff like that, it's just incredible. And it just blows my mind sometimes because, like, you know, when I first started listening to podcasts, right, I got into like the very heavily produced stuff, like Freakonomics, Revisionist History, 99% Invisible, where you have like research teams, and when you have like, you know, 3 or 4, you know, experts coming on to talk about the particular topic. But then this Anthropocene Reviewed is like almost on the opposite spectrum, where it's like completely minimalist. It's just one guy researching a topic, writing out a script, reading it out, and it's amazing, right? Each topic that he does, he goes on and on for about like 10 to 15 minutes, but it's great. I love it. I wish I could do something like that. I'm still learning, but yeah.
you're gonna have to write a book like The Fault in Our Stars, and then get your voice on WNYC.
yeah.
And final question: yeah. What would you like to see more of in the Asian podcasting scene?
Oh man, I would definitely love to see more people getting on, but then getting on in terms of like taking podcasting seriously as a medium and then trying to experiment more with the field. Because now, when I first came into podcasting, right, it was the year 2017. This was like a mini boom, a sort of prelude to the boom that happened in 2019, where suddenly, I don't know how many new players came into the Singapore podcasting scene, people that I never even heard of, right? But the thing that I always see is that it's always the same styles repeated ad nauseum. It's always A, interview style, B, discussion style, and or C, just a standard monologue. It's just these three formats repeated ad nauseum about any number of topics. And I mean, it's fine to a certain extent, but what I really want to see people do more of is try to push the boundaries in terms of what the medium can provide. And this can be in the form of like experimenting with your sound production. This can mean in terms of like playing around with your show structure. You know, this can mean like all sorts of other things, you know, like, The big sort of news institutions, they're starting to get into podcasting more these days, with Singapore at least, but they're not experimenting, at least to the degree that, you know, a publication like the New York Times is experimenting with The Daily, right? The Daily is like a smash hit of a podcast. I consider that to be like one of the gold standards of podcasting in terms of like the quality that they can produce and how often they can push out the episodes. They do out five like gold standard quality episodes a week. That is insane, you know?
Yeah,
like if I did an episode of that quality, I would require like at least 3 weeks, right? To research and then to edit and to piece it all together. They can push out like five of the episodes a week, and that's insane. But in Singapore, no, we're just sticking to like the discussion or like the interview format. And it's incredibly boring. That is not the thing that's going to push the industry forward, for me at least. So I'm just hoping that people experiment a whole lot more. Yeah.
All right. Greater experimentation, maybe a little bit more music bed sound design.
Yeah.
And I mean different formats.
Yeah. Even like something that you do something called Tempered Fables, right?
Ah, yes. Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Even something like that, I think that would be a step in the right direction, because it's something different, and it's, you know, a different perspective or a different touch to what people normally can do with podcasting. Yeah, even that could be good work as well.
Do you think it would be good for someone to dive into like narrative sound design podcasts as their first show that they produce? Because I did that, and I feel like it was a lot to learn the hard way, because I think it took me like 1 month to do episode one. And now, I mean, now my turnover is a lot faster, but still, oh my goodness. When I started off with Tempered Fables, oh my God.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely the learning curve for that kind of show is a whole lot steeper. But I would say once you get the hang of it, it's even a whole lot more rewarding. Because even with the Economical Rice podcast, the first podcast that I did, right, I experimented the shit out of that show, okay? Mm. When I first started out, it was just me researching on a topic, writing out a script, and just reading it into a mic, and just some light editing, that was it. But then 1 year into it, I got bored of the format, I wanted to change, and then I started turning it slowly more and more into a narrative storytelling with like music, with like, you know, different sound clips playing in, with more voices weaved in. And I even did stuff like, I had like, I think two audio drama episodes. So I did some crazy shit like that. There was one episode that I did, right, that had, as a cold open, a 5 minute sequence that like, it was like a dream sequence kind of thing. Yeah. So it was a lot of like sound design and experimentation, but yeah, it was definitely a lot of work to get into it, but I can say it's very rewarding. It's very fun.
Were your listeners okay with that? Were you changing format so much and experimenting?
Yeah, I think they were okay. not that many people respond to me on the Economical Rice podcast. So I only got feedback from the people that I know, which was other podcasters in the local scene at the time. Yeah, I think they appreciated it for what I did. But, you know, I kept it going. The listeners, there was a noticeable spike in listeners. So I think it was working.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. And we are nearing the end of, well, the chat. Now, Danny, where can we find you if we want to talk to you more about either podcasting or what you're doing with Fable Productions or opportunities, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So I have a website. It's called fableproductions.com. And you can check out some of the work that I've done over there. Not all my projects are up there at the moment, but the ones that are already out there are there. And then if you want to reach out to me personally, you can either do so through Facebook, Instagram, or even LinkedIn. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. And of course, links to all your social media and the website will be in the show notes right below. And wait, just to check, right? Fable is, there's no E, right, in Fable?
Yes, there is no E. Okay, it's F-A-B-L.
Okay, so F-A-B-L. F-A-B-L Productions. Okay, so if anyone is Googling, I think it's best if you like Google Fable Productions Danny, right? Yeah. Like, I think maybe that's a good way to do it. Okay.
It'll get you there, yeah.
All right, Danny, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Norman.
And that's it, my chat with Danny Cordy of Fable Productions. We talked about quite a number of things, from his journey through to his time doing Fable Productions and his thoughts on basically taking a leap of faith and creating your own full-time venture into the world of podcasting. It's fantastic following Danny's journey in trying to tap into the opportunities that lay ahead of this growing space here in Asia. And I hope that you learned quite a number of things, because I did. A lot of lessons, actually. So I'll definitely apply it to this show and this brand. As always, links in the show notes right below for if you want to talk to Danny for anything and everything related to creating an amazing narrative show, podcasting, and anything else in between. As always, that's it for this episode. If you want to take a look for more information on us, you can always check out our Podchaser link right below, where you can give a quick rating and more discussions on our Kyrie, which I will also post right there below. Take care. Norm here, staying safe in the confines of my own house, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye-bye. The theme song is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.
Covering the Asian podcasting scene.
Well, yeah, I've always been curious. What is your podcasting story? How did you get into podcasting? I don't think we ever talked about this.
Oh, okay. Well, you brought up Tempered Fables. Tempered Fables is my first show ever. So I started in 2017. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to podcasts for maybe a year, 2 years before then. But in 2017, I started my first job. It was like a full-time remote company, like fintech, it's a Japanese company here in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And on the side, I took up the hobby of short story fiction, because I was writing answers like that on Quora. So I decided to take that a little bit more seriously, and I drafted a story. There was this fiction short story competition that was happening, and I was like, okay, this is a good goal. Let me write a story for it, and I can just ascend it. And at least, like, even if I didn't win, that's a sign of progress, right? Like, I've tried, you know? And right before the deadline, I stopped. I got scared, and I didn't hand in the story. And I was annoyed at myself. I was like, why didn't I send it in? And I think it's because I was scared of being judged or embarrassed or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And then I had this idea where, if you know those events where there's someone narrating a storybook, and then there's like kids huddling together, listening to the person as they're narrating and they're doing voices and all that.
Yeah.
I really like that kind of event. So I've always wanted to emulate that. So what I did was I decided to narrate my first short story ever as an audio file. And I found a free resource for songs, sound effects. And then I, you know, mashed that all together and I made the first episode. And then I realized that there are different ways to basically create what was called a podcast, because I started finding other narrative podcasts. Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe I can emulate that format. And then from then on, episode one came out. Yeah. And then I ended up trying to make that like a monthly thing. So every month there was a new episode. And then I went from 1 month to twice a week, which is insane. Never doing that again. That's just stupid of me. I think I was just really bored, right? I was just really bored. I guess that's why. So that's 2 years in. And then last year, I resigned from my full-time job to do freelance while I was trying to find out different ways to create a business. Wow. While I was still doing podcasting as a hobby, like still hasn't became full-time yet. Mm. And opportunity came to me when I did freelance work for a website, writing an article about podcasting for them. One of those articles was to interview Ling Ling.
Mm.
And that's how we got connected. And then later on, like a month after, Ling Ling reached out to me to see if she if I want to help organize the Asia Podcast Summit.
Mm.
So I helped out and I became one of the organizers. That gave me access to pretty much everyone involved, including guest speakers and, you know, like what happened in the back end and all that.
Yeah.
So I'm in this unique position where not only do I know more than the average person about the podcasting industry, since I read about it like habitually anyway, I also help organize the Asia Podcast Summit and I have access to all these speakers. So I'm in this position where, okay, what if I create some sort of partner brand thing that can go in parallel with that? And from there, I built Podlovers Asia, which was supposed to cover the Asian podcasting industry.
Mm-hmm.
Since I read up on Pod News and Hot Pod and all that, they cover news all over the world, but not Asia.
And
one of the reasons why is there's not enough news, so you barely ever hear news about what's happening in Asia. And I find that quite sad. So I decided to, since I'm here on the field right now, I can reach out to people immediately with,
exactly,
for example, updates from the Asia Podcast Summit. And then later on, that this show took off and now people are reaching out to me. So that's pretty interesting. My job is to basically, this show is my excuse to build the podcast ecosystem here. And it doesn't matter how I do it, whether it's just interviewing one person at a time or building this Quora thingy. And yeah, that's what I'm working on right now.
Yeah, I love it, man. I used to do this side series called Podcast Spotlight, where I would just like interview random people in the Singapore scene, just because I wanted other people to know that there are other people out there doing podcasting besides me. I did, I think around 15, 20 or something, but then I just stopped because I was getting ready to do Fable. But yeah, it seems like you're picking up the mantle and I love it. I was only covering Singapore at the time. So I was talking to a bunch of people there, but then yeah, since you're doing this, it's awesome and I am all for it. What were your first inspirations in podcasting? It's like, I find it curious that you started doing fiction short stories as your first show.
So the first, the big three that compelled me to want to start a show is Memory Palace. Lore and LeVar Burton Reads. Right, so those are high quality, big ass production shows.
Okay,
right, have like Lore, the host is the writer.
Yeah,
Memory Palace, Nate DeMeo is the writer.
Yeah,
and LeVar Burton Reads, he narrates published short stories or books. Are like, you know, Pulitzer Prize winners or Nebula Prize winners or some shit. And he has like amazing narrative voice and there's sound design. So that was my standard, right? That's how I tried to, my episode one was me trying to emulate a combination of all three.
Mm.
And that was my standard ever since then for each and every single episode up until now. But I had to bring it back down to bi-weekly now so that I can focus on doing other shows as well. Since, like you said, we brought up the point of people experimenting. I like the fact that there's formats to experiment with, but in Asia, it's not sustainable. So I have to like tone down on my frequency on that. So that's why I have to do the boring interview thing.
I mean, I love it. I thought you came from like No Sleep, the No Sleep podcast or something.
No. No Sleep, the guys from Renegade, No Sleep is their inspiration.
I was hooked on like No Sleep for like a good, I think, a month or so, because they have such an incredible backlog, and you know they have like so many voice actors and shit, so they're pumping out stuff like crazy. I was like, there was a period I was just listening to that like every single day.
they have a whole team, like a whole variety of voices. I'm like, oh, I'm so jealous. Like, I want to have a group of people that come in and then do voices like that. Oh, that'd be so cool.
I came from like Freakonomics and like Planet Money. I tried to emulate that shit, you know. They have like a full team, I have me. Yeah, so when I would try to do that kind of quality, it took me like, I think, a good 3-4 weeks just to put out one episode. And that was when I felt like the strain and stuff. And yeah, I mean, freaking hell, I remember, right, I was doing one episode about bubble tea, okay? Right, you would think people would want to come on and talk about bubble tea, right? I wanted to just talk about, like, you know, the culture, where it came from, how these people got to know bubble tea, what it means to them. So I reached out to a bunch of these food bloggers, right? And then all of them were like, oh no, it's okay, I don't want to talk, I don't think I have much to say on the cultural aspect. Like, come on, you are the culture, why don't you want to talk about it? What the hell? Yeah, that one was a real sort of a low point in terms of like the stumbling blocks you hit. Yeah, in when you're trying to create a show like that, it's annoying.
I don't think I've reached that point yet. I'm worried about reactions from people even after, for example, because I don't know how you do pitches to guests, for example. I pitch the outline, like, in my outreach. So they don't have to think, right? They just have to provide. Like I'll facilitate the conversation and everything. I don't think, like, it'll be very hard to create a way for them to be on call and say, oh, I don't know how to answer it. at least for me. Yeah, but you know, it can get very complicated trying to manage all these different varieties of episodes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends on what you're trying to do for the episode, right? So for instance, for my screwed up moments, my whole thing is that I'm trying to get them to tell their story. So I have to research and to learn more about their story beforehand. And then I sort of have a rough skeleton, have a rough picture in mind of how they're going to share the story, what are the turning points and so on. But then in my outreach, I just send them like a brief and then like a general skeleton of like the segments of how I'm going to interview them. So it's like background, screwed up moment, redemption moment. And then like some general questions that will be inside. But then when the interview starts, it's like, oh, you know, when did this happen? How did this happen? Tell us more about this. Tell us more about this. So yeah, there are different ways to approach this. But as long as I think something works, I think that's good enough.
Yeah, there are a lot of you should, I'm not sure how active you are on Twitter, but the podcasters there, like globally, they're very, very supportive of each other in terms of trying to give tips on interviewing or trying to give tips on how to do effective sound design. It's pretty awesome. So hopefully if we see more and more interesting independent podcasters from Asia coming up, hopefully they'll be either on Twitter or on LinkedIn or in groups that we manage.
Yeah.
Which would be fantastic, but yeah, hopefully in the future.
Yeah.
I just need to know how to make money for the time being.
I don't know, maybe in the long run you could do something like what Hot Pot is doing with the newsletter and shit. Since you're already that guy in the know.
I can.
Yeah.
It's just that I'm an okay writer, but I'm a better speaker. So I'm wondering to do more of multiple quick short virtual summits and then aggregate experts that I know, bring them together in, and then that's a package, right? Like you can join the virtual summit for free, but then if you want to access the content forever after that weekend, then you have to pay.
I think
that could be one way to do it, and then just have constant quarterly events, which would be pretty good. That's the initial idea I'm thinking of, but I think it's best that I start doing that after I build the community, because then that's the best testing ground.
Yeah,
because maybe no one will join the summit and that would suck shit. But at least we have a community to test ideas. So like if for example, we have everyone that we know in Singapore join Potlovers Singapore group in the Potlovers Asia Quora thingy, then like it's just bouncing off ideas. If you're moderating that group or if you're managing that group, because there's no way I won't be able to manage all however many countries groups. then it can always test ideas and see how people react to it. Because I think that's a good way to increase discussion and discourse on how to build the industry.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this forum thing. I think I should like post it publicly so that I can actually kick my own ass and actually get it done by end of the next week or something.
At the same time, I think you can get some feedback about maybe like how it should be done or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.